Welcome to the Athenaeum Review, where we talk about the ideas that shape our world. I'm Ben Lima, and our guest today is Sandra Russ. Dr. Russ is Distinguished University Professor and Lewis D. Beaumont University Professor at Case Western Reserve University, and one of the world's leading experts on child development and pretend play. She's the author of 6 books and over 100 journal articles, including most recently the book Pretend Play in Childhood, The Foundation of Adult Creativity. She developed a foundational measure for assessing pretend play in children, which has been used all over the world. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
I wanted to start just with a basic question. What is pretend play and why is it important?
Pretend play is when a child makes things up, uses fantasy, expresses emotion, and it really is a universal language for children around the world. So children start to pretend when they're about 2, 2.5, and engage in pretend play and fantasy play until they're about 9 or 10, depending on the child. It's a freedom of expressing their ideas and emotions in a pretend world.
And it seems like when children do this and sort of really get into this, it helps them develop in all sorts of ways, right?
Yes, it's an important part of child development because it helps them to develop their imagination. It helps them to understand the perspective of other people and other children. And it helps them to their emotions. It's a way that children process emotions.
So now, in terms of the history of psychology and our understanding of children and so forth, it seems like play might not always have been recognized as this really important thing, right? I mean, there might be adults who think it's just play, like they should be doing their homework
exactly,
or something. So you've helped show people that it's really important that they do this.
Yes. And I think many child educators really know that pretend play is important. And people who work with children know that it's important. But I think in the society at large, play is often devalued.
Right.
It's not work, it's not learning, and it's seen by many people as being a waste of time for children.
Yeah.
And it's not a waste of time.
Yeah.
Some people in the literature, some writers have spoken about play as being children's work. Mm-hmm. I don't really like the word work because play is also fun, but it is a way that they're working to accomplish many things for themselves. So it is not a waste of time.
I'm the father of a 6-year-old myself, and all of my understanding of this sort of comes through that. But you know, there seems like on the one hand it's such a natural, such a universal thing, and then on the other, well, I guess as a parent, it might be so easy to worry about things like, well, is the school environment allowing them to do this like they need to, or is technology, are screens getting in the way of doing this? Or it seems like it's really easy to worry about whether kids are able to do this. But would you say that in the big picture, are there these kind of threats that concern you about this?
Kids are in a sense wired to engage in pretend play. So it's a natural ability that should develop if they have the time and space to do it. And that's what parents can provide, is the time and space and encouragement to engage in pretend play. It would be wonderful if preschools and early elementary schools would do this. They're not, for the most part, but parents can provide that opportunity at home, especially for young children. The issue of technology, which can come into the home, is a big question.
I was working at the coordination of the
No, that's fine.
Thing. So we'll see if
is this about the right pace?
Oh yeah, this is great. So Oscar will just edit out this last couple of minutes of chatting with the sandwich guy. Okay.
Technology.
Yes.
So research, really good research has not yet been carried out to see what effect computers, video games, technology has had on the development of play and creativity in children. Have looked at our play research samples from 1987 to 2008. We had measures on 14 different groups of children over this period of time using the same play measure. Yeah. We expected to find a decrease in play ability and imagination because of the increase in technology during that time. We did not find a decrease. In fact, we found a slight increase in imagination in play. What has happened since 2000 and today, which is when the iPhones and iPads have kind of really come into play, we have play samples, we need to look at it. Some authors, Professor Kim, has found using a measure of creativity, Torrance test, that creativity decreased during that period of 1987 to 2008. So we did not find that looking at children's play. So the jury is still out, I think, on what effect technology has. I think if parents make sure there's enough time for traditional pretend play with blocks and toys and puppets and Legos, that technology has to be integrated into life. But to provide time and space for pretend play is important too.
I also wanted to ask you about, there's the kind of key age of these young children doing pretend play. And then we think a lot about creativity in adults and, you know, different fields and so on and so forth. But I wondered if you could talk about kind of the progression or development, like what happens after a kid goes past these years of pretend play and kind of through adolescence, and how does that evolve as they grow up?
That's a good question. In play from 3 to 10, you can see the ingredients of adult creativity.
Right.
So it's practice with these very basic abilities that we know is important in adult creativity, like coming up with a lot of different ideas.
Yes.
Like being able to take the perspective of the other.
Yeah.
Like being able to go back and forth between imagination and logic, between imagination in the story and then an organized narrative around that imagination, and the ability to express a lot of affect and emotion in the play themes, like monsters, or being scared about going to the doctor, or being happy at a birthday party. So all of these abilities are being practiced in play. And then as the child becomes 9, 10, 11, and they're not playing like this anymore, they grow out of it. The question is, what happens to those abilities? Well, they go off into different areas. The child who likes to write may begin writing fiction, writing poetry, writing plays. The child who is excited about science begins developing science projects, thinking creatively about what needs to be done in a certain area.
Right.
The engineer may begin to tinker more and develop more products in that area. So, and these abilities start to combine with the child's natural talents, like music, like verbal ability, like mathematical ability. So it becomes more specific in a specific journey. Does that make sense?
I think it does. It's so interesting to think about how, you know, how this would be expressed differently in different fields and so forth. I also wanted to ask you, I guess in the broadest sense, just about gender, and in your research or otherwise, what can we say about how gender affects the way kids do this?
So on creativity measures, boys and girls do equally well.
Yeah.
There's no difference in creative ability on creativity tests.
Yeah.
In play, we also see no difference in the imagination, the quality of the imagination, the story, the quality of the story, or the amount of emotion expressed. Boys and girls look the same on these main measures. The one area where they differ in most of our studies, not all, has been in the expression of aggression. And boys express more aggression, anger in their pretend play. So there's more fighting, more wrestling, shooting bows and arrows, competitive sports in their play than girls show. Overall, there's the same amount of emotion, have a little more positive, nurturing affect in their play, giving gifts, taking care of each other. But the significant difference is in aggression.
Interesting.
In typical developing children, this is what you see.
Right.
And more emotion, if it's in a well-developed story, relates to other measures of creativity. We found this difference 20 years ago. We found this difference on another measure of emotion in fantasy when I was first doing research about 1985 or so. Found this difference in aggressive expression in fantasy in children on another measure. It's consistent to this day, which is really interesting. I thought that as we became more sensitive about girls' development, right, and the importance of freedom and expression, that you'd see more aggression in their way, healthy,
right,
aggression.
Right, right.
As the years went on, but we don't.
Huh.
It stays the same. I don't know what you observe in your son, but in boys, aggressive play in a pretend setting is typical.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned this in your lecture and and just now, but just to be clear, when you're talking about aggression, you know, you're not talking about something that's kind of dangerous or worrisome.
No,
it's just like,
it's pretend. It's one puppet punching the other because they were upset, or having a wrestling match and seeing who is stronger, or having a race to see who gets to the finish line first, and saying to the other, "I'm better than you." It's that kind of quality that you see more in boys play than in girls play.
Interesting. You know, well, speaking again from my own experience as a parent, listening to your lecture and thinking about what I've observed in our son, something that's so obvious is this fascination with, let's say, anything with wheels, cars, trucks, trains.
Yes.
Like if you give him a room of toys,
yes,
he'll want the stuff with wheels, and you know, he'll just kind of ignore the other stuff. And so I thought originally, you know, does that mean that he or boys or whatever are less, you know, less creative or empathetic or whatever. So I was interested to hear you say, oh, you know, it kind of, even if the boys are all just with cars and trucks and whatever, it sort of comes out the same in terms of creativity.
Right. It depends on what they're doing with it.
I see.
It doesn't so much matter what the toy is.
Right.
It's what they're doing with it.
Right.
Are they putting a story around it? Are they pretending with it?
Interesting.
Or are they just kind of going back and forth with the car, which very little children do, but as they get older, usually there's some kind of a story around it.
Let me ask, could you talk a little bit about how you got into this field and how you ended up in this area of research?
So my interest in creativity really started when I was an undergraduate at the University of Pittsburgh. I don't know how I got interested in creativity. You know, I've thought about that. I think my father had a very creative mind. He was also very funny. And that might have had something to do with my kind of fascination with the creative mind. But as an undergraduate, I was interested in creativity. My honors project looked at creativity and preference for asymmetrical pictures. Creative individuals do prefer asymmetry in their pictures as compared to less creative individuals. Then in graduate school, I did another study. I became a graduate student in clinical psychology at the University of Pittsburgh. Did another study looking at creativity and anxiety, how anxiety affected creativity. And then I didn't do any creativity research until I went to Case Western Reserve University. But what I did in between graduate school and becoming part of the psychology department at Case was to work in various clinical settings with children. I did a lot of therapy with children at Washington University Child Guidance Center and used play a lot in the therapy, and found play, first of all, to be very helpful in helping children who were depressed or anxious come to grips with their issues and their problems and learn to process their emotions, actually. And as we worked together, I also saw that they became more creative in their thinking. You could just kind of see it happening. And that started my interest in play and creativity. Was this just my observation, you know, or was there really a link between the ability to pretend and play and creative thinking in children? And so after that, I went to Case Western and began a research program looking at fantasy, affect and fantasy, and creativity in children. And then around 5, started to develop a major pretend play Because if you're going to study pretend play, you have to be able to measure pretend play and have a standardized measure that every child gets and that every child can do, that will then be able to be used to see if play really does relate to creative measures in child populations. So that's kind of how I developed my interest.
You mentioned just now the measure that you developed, which is now very widely used. And I wanted to ask about the question of sort of cross-cultural, or how different cultures and cultural values play into how that's viewed in different contexts.
So other people's work has, other people such as Gaskin, have looked at play in different cultures. They've really studied play in different cultures and have found that pretend play does occur in all cultures. It's really universal.
Right.
In cultures that don't value complexity as much as Western cultures do in adult careers, the pretend may not be as complex or fantasy oriented, but it is still pretend in terms of dealing with real life issues. So other people have found that pretend play occurs in all cultures. What we have found, and we've only really used this measure in Western cultures, is that there are some differences. Children in Italy, in a large sample by Adriana Lees, children had more emotion in their pretend play.
Yeah.
Than U.S. samples had. U.S. samples had a little more imagination in their play than Italian children had. And we wrestled with why that was so. It went to, we think, child-rearing and the values of the culture. I would like to use this measure in non-Western samples. My guess is that the factor structure, and I don't want to get too technical here, but the cognitive and affective areas that are being expressed in play are the same. There may be differences in how much is expressed and whether or not it relates to creativity. We don't know that yet.
This is a little bit on a tangent, but based on your research with children, I wondered, even for those adults who are not parents, if you were speaking to adults who want to cultivate creativity in their daily life, and what kind of advice you give to someone who wants to think about how to be more creative.
As an adult,
just as, yeah.
To try new things, give yourself, if you're working on a problem, time to reflect and time to not think about it directly. We use the term incubation, time for the idea, the work to incubate.
Yeah.
So if you're wanting to be creative in a particular area, learn the area. You have to know the area intensely and deeply before you can really come up with something creative. So study it, give yourself time to think, try new things, get into different fields, different areas, because you can then draw from something in the arts, perhaps, to an engineering problem and vice versa. There's a lot of research on mood, and that positive mood can facilitate creative thinking. So do what gets you into a positive mood to do your creative work. That doesn't mean that you don't use what you learn when you're in a negative space, like sad or depressed. But to really do the work, the research supports positive mood state, and find time and space that kind of facilitates your own work. If group interaction is helpful, find people to bounce ideas off of. That's helpful for some people, not for everybody. And when you think about positive mood, it really relates back to children's play, because a typical child is having fun. So they're in a really positive mood state when they're letting all of these ideas. One important point is that when we talk about these creative abilities in children and pretend play in children, these abilities are different than what IQ tests measure. So in our work, pretend play imagination and abilities relate to creativity after you control for verbal IQ. So the important message here is that a creative ability and ability in pretend play is something different from intelligence. It's a resource that children have that's different from IQ. This is important because there are a lot of young children, 3, 4, 5, 6, where you can see their creative potential in their play but it may be getting missed on IQ tests or in academic functioning. And we need to do a better job of identifying creative potential in these children so it can be nurtured and developed and in whatever means that particular school is providing.
That seems so, well, obviously so important, but maybe even surprising. And it, as you know, obviously so much of the system or the school system often seems focused on the test and the test and the test. And are you, you know, what do you know? And can you pass a test and everything? But it's, it seems so important that there's this whole other value and skill that doesn't fit into maybe that system that should be cultivated more.
That's right. Yeah. And this ability could be incorporated into curricula by helping, giving children time to develop creative projects or to think about alternative strategies or to ask uncomfortable questions, perhaps.
Yeah.
We could develop IQ tests that assess these abilities. And some people have done that. Yeah. Sternberg has done a lot of work in this area. But generally, what's used in this country, these tests do not measure creativity.
This is the Athenaeum Review, where we talk about the ideas that shape our world. Our guest today is Sandra Rust, Distinguished University Professor at Case Western Reserve University and a world expert on pretend play and childhood development. Her most recent book is Pretend Play and Childhood, The Foundation of Adult Creativity. Dr. Russ's visit to UT Dallas was sponsored by the Center for Values in Medicine, Science, and Technology.